Hello, hello. Welcome back, everybody. And I am going to start this live stream in just a second. I appreciate everybody being on here today. In just a second, I'm going to be pinning up to the top today's space. If everybody could retweet that, I would be very, very grateful. If you're new to the show, then you know that I hardly ever do streams. I just kind of started it, and I'm completely new to it. But here we go. All right. We are live, everybody. Welcome, welcome back to another show of If You Know, You Know, the show for Web3 creators and enthusiasts. I am your host, Belle, and each week I'm joined by Web3 experts to bring the latest trends, opportunities, and perspectives from the creators who are shaping the future of technology and art. Nothing we ever say is ever financial advice, and it's always important to do your own research. If this is your first time joining us, we do this show live on X every Wednesday at 1 p.m. Central Standard Time. You can also find us on any of your favorite streaming platforms. I'm super excited for today. Two amazing creators and artists that I've been wanting to get on this show for a long time. And one is like dropping this really cool project on Ordinals just this week. The second one is celebrating third year anniversary of having minted first digital art in the blockchain. So let's get to it. Jason, I want to introduce you first. How are you, friend?
I'm okay. I'm doing good. I've been doing the cold shower thing, the plunge thing in the morning.
Are you really?
Well, I don't have access to a cold, you know, bath. So I do like hot sauna and then I jump in cold shower at the gym. And I don't know. Today feels different. Like I've been doing it every day since December and today just kind of feels different.
So what's the difference?
I don't know. I have a lot of energy today.
Dang, that's amazing.
And I didn't get an extra lot of sleep. We're actually taking care of a dying cat. Or passing cat, I don't know what to call it, but so we didn't get much sleep last night, but I still feel amazing, so I'm here for it.
Is it the first time that you feel that kind of like, you know, transformation?
It's the first time that it's lasted, you know, like I do it. My gym, so I go to the gym in the morning and I get all these ideas and I get all jazzed up and I get my sauna in and then I get my shower in and I'm like, oh, hey, let's go for the day. And then I get home and I'm done. Like I flatline. Like I'm out of energy by 10 a.m.
Wow. Like,
you know, so I don't know what it is, but today it feels good. So today will be my one productive day of February and then we'll see what happens tomorrow.
You know what? It's a lot more than other people can attest to. That's really cool. I was actually just talking to a friend of mine. I was in Minnesota and it's snowing currently there, or was snowing, and it is cold, 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 cold. It's like 7 degrees is the lowest that it got. And that has become a thing. Like it's a very popular thing right now to do the sauna and in the house and then to do the cold plunges. And we were just talking about the popularity of it. So I think that's really cool. What a coincidence that you would bring that up. Really, really cool.
Well, yeah. That's great. Yeah. So yeah, I'd love to meet Paris. I've been checking her out online.
Yes, Paris. So. I know. Paris is a vibe. Paris is a vibe. And Paris has been doing a lot of really cool stuff lately. Paris, you want to introduce yourself?
Hey guys, interesting conversation. I love it. It's something I definitely wanna try. Cold plunging. I've seen it on Instagram. It's been on my to-do list. There's something about going from warm to cold that really refreshes you and like kind of like shocks the body. So I totally get it. But thank you for the warm welcome. It's been a fun year, I would have to say, because I've been kind of working on this for the past year, but this week is extra special because it's coming to a 1 year anniversary. So yeah, I'm stoked to be here with you guys and kind of chat it up about Ordinals and Super Julio. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. I'm super excited to have you on here. The first thing, Paris, that I see when I pulled up your artwork, super colorful, very playful, very, you know, fun, if you will. Walk us through, you know, your creative process. How did you come up with that? Why is it as playful as we see on here? What's behind it? And then kind of the thesis, why are you doing it on ordinals? I love, first of all, you know, if anybody knows the trajectory of what I've done, ordinals is something that I'm super interested in. And I always love to see why an artist would choose to do ordinals. And then Jason, I want to ask you, like, have you, you know, taken anything in the ordinal space? Have you been interested in it at all? Are you on mute?
I'm a little interested in it. I guess it costs a lot of money to put high definition work there, you know? So as a photographer, it seems out of the scope of what I'm capable of doing in terms of not just, you know, because it costs money to put on, but I just don't see the collectors there on the art side, on the fine art side, or whatever you want to fucking call it, right? I know it's a contentious term, right? But let's call it the high definition art side. So I won't make the NFTs is so siloed, right? The whole NFT space is so siloed. Like for me to go to ordinals, and people have been asking me to do my traditional work on ordinals, because I've been a career artist for 14 years now, so in big, big physical. So they want me to put like digital stuff on ordinals, but I'm like, how? Right? It costs too much money, and I'm not going to jump into this without support. Like, I'm not going to. It's been so hard building community already. Like to jump into the ordinal side, it just seems like starting a new business. But I am interested, right? You know, like that's. It seems like that would be a place to find, if they ever show up, trad art collectors who are also interested in Bitcoin.
Which is a lot, you know, the whole ordinals journey, when it first came out, that was the thesis of it. Like that was before ordinal collections started coming out and before projects started coming out, the thesis of it was this is going to be a home for fine art for Bitcoin collectors that obviously, you know, have a lot more money just because it's Bitcoin and, you know, higher value, higher, more expensive. And so collectors that are willing to pay just a little bit more and have it on the golden standard. I know that was a really big thesis of what we were going to see. We started seeing other artists jump in. Jack Butcher was some of the first ones. Justin Arvasano, I think, also was one of the first photographers to mint on Bitcoin. And the thesis was it's going to be the home for a fine art collection, as well as, you know, much later actual collections, PFP collections. But the fine art thesis has stayed and remains on there, even though it is a lot more expensive. But hey, you know, if your collectors are willing to pay a little bit more. Paris, I see you nodding your head. What do you think about that?
Oh, so many thoughts. I do agree with you, Jason. When it comes down to it's an investment here on ordinals. And also, it's a beginning of definitely a business where you're nurturing a new community, you know, attracting different collectors. So just, I guess, to your question, Val, about like the thesis of like why I started in ordinals. Well, just before all of that, I started as a community member and going into NFTs. I wasn't really launching much art just yet. I was in Solana. And 6 months prior to, you know, ordinals beginning, I was like, you know, trying like putting my pieces up on like exchange art, just learning the community aspect of things. So, you know, my background mostly is I've been doing art most of my life, but not in a professional sense, right? I've had pieces, mixed media pieces, physical pieces in art galleries, but my, you know, Web 2 experience for the past 15 years has been like working in startups and in technology aspects. So I've just my genuine core, I'm drawn to new tech, right? So I was releasing pieces of art, and it was actually the first pieces of Julio in Solana, and then ordinals came, And I was like, well, this, because I started my investment portfolio with Bitcoin, it just made a lot more sense. The way I see ordinals or just chains in general, Solana, Ethereum, and Bitcoin in general, it's they're just different canvases of what an artist can actually create on, right? And for me, I was like, okay, I went into it just learning, and I released a few pieces, a smaller collection last year, which was 30 pieces. And I airdropped a few pieces last year as well, but nothing as large or large scale as this, because of what Jason said, the point, it is expensive. So to really learn the community aspect, I took the year to really just dive into making relationships in the ordinal space, understanding technology, understanding what the technology can bring to my artwork. And at the end of the day, my piece, my ethos as a project is to storytell and to have a character where people can resonate with. So I inscribed Twilio on February 24th of last year. It's 169,000 inscription range. And I left it there. And I was like, okay, I'm going to inscribe this one piece and I'm going to build a story upon it. And then I went into a learning phase of, you know, I still released pieces of art. I still made art, but I just never really put it on chain. I just wanted people to resonate with Twilio. So that's kind of what I did. I met a lot of really experienced devs, learned about the technology. And what I found is that it's a great option for artists. And to your point, like fine artists in a way to select different layers of their canvases where... you know, there is talk about rare sats in some ways, but that just gives you several layers of like, you want it the most rare and the most, you want to put it on common sats and it definitely have a different price value versus a common, Paris, right?
Paris, can I interrupt you for a second? For anybody who's new, that's like, doesn't know what a rare sat is or any of that, what's the difference? Why is it rare versus, you know, common?
And I love that you asked it because, you know, there's a lot of like, words thrown out like as to what a rare sat is, right? So it's the way that I see it is just that it's the scarcity of certain sats. Like, for example, a pizza sat, really people don't know the reason why a pizza sat is scarce is because it's the first commercial use of Bitcoin. So a dev basically sent 10,000 BTC to buy two Papa John pizzas, but that sat that you're holding was within that transaction. So that's 10,000 sats. So it's 10,000 Bitcoin, I'm sorry. But that's the rarity of it. And so it scales up from there. Block 9 for 450, that's one of the oldest Satoshis from like what Satoshi was holding. So it's just more so the storyline and you go down the Bitcoin history and you really go deep a rabbit hole and you really think about the collectors and you're kind of diving into the Bitcoin community as to how they value these pieces. So really to Jason's point, yeah, it is nurturing a new community. It's nurturing a new collector base and really understanding the history of Bitcoin before diving right in. So that's essentially what I did. And I'm still not the most expert of it. Like I said, I started in Solana. I invested in Bitcoin. So I don't really know much of the Bitcoin history up until this year. And I will not say that I am an expert, but I will say what I know and break it down in the easiest form. So.
Yeah. I think that we, other people may come from like Web 2 or from, you know, the normie side of the world and look at people like us that have been here for more than 1 year. And I've heard the word expert thrown around and it's like, dude, if you only knew that every single day we're learning something new, you know, and that we don't know like a big, big part of it. I don't care how long you've been here. None of us are experts. It just doesn't exist yet. Right. I mean, eventually it will, but not yet. Jason, you've been around though for quite a minute and you are the founder of The Art of Selling Art. And one of the things that I, after having discussions with so many artists, one of the things that is like a resounding, you know, something that everybody can agree on is when you come from Web 2 to Web 3, or even if you're crypto native, one of the hardest things for artists in the space is to learn how to sell their product and learn how to be seen and learn how to build that community and actually go from just minting to actual having collectors. I wanted to tap into your brain and see what your general thoughts are of, you know, of an artist building your own community, your own portfolio of collectors, and actually getting things sold.
Yeah, that's a really broad place to start. So my biggest volume of sales have come from participating in other communities. But I've honestly had the most difficult time gaining traction as, well, okay, well, here's the problem. We'll start with the Web 2 to Web 3. When I came to Web 3 back in February 21, I came with this mindset that I had already earned something. Right. I'm a full-time artist since 2012. I've been in Nat Geo. I've been in TED Talks. I've been on entrepreneur.com. Like, all my work and my CV was like long. So then I came to NFTs and I was like, hey guys, here's my shit. And people were like, we don't care about you. But at first, photography wasn't and still is struggling in terms of like gaining traction in the NFT space. But then secondly, it was like the original mindset and the original community in NFTs was very degen tech related with no art experience, right? So they were coming in like fresh eyes and they're like, we don't want the old stuff, we want the new stuff. So so like from the start, I had a lot of trouble with the whole Web 2 to Web 3 transition. And what I had to do, and what I've always done as an artist, is find ways to pivot into the trend, right? Instead of adopting and like taking a thread of it of my own, I've always kind of pivoted in. So becoming part of communities and then creating with them in mind. And one of the roadblocks I see with Web 2 people coming into Web 3, and this idea that I kind of push a little bit, is that people don't want to do something different. Right? I think there's an idea in sidestep, I will monologue when I get into your teaching space. So just, you know, raise your hand and tell me to shut up or mute me or something. But what I've done is, like, my philosophy in art is that you can create in a whole wide avenue of methods as long as your voice stays the same. So like if you pick up the book I wrote, which has nothing to do with visual art, it's a whole different thing. It's called Naked Thoughts. And you read that, and then you read a caption from one of my portrait pieces, and then you read a caption for one of my like landscapes. You can be like, the same guy did all this stuff, even though they're wildly different pieces. So in the NFT space, I can do an art collection with Angel Baby Hit Squad, and I can do an art collection with the SNEC community. And those pieces still look like they came from me, and the ideas that came from me. So like, building community is really, really difficult in terms of like organic growth. But if you can attach yourself to trends and stay relevant with what's going on, then you can take your style and put it into there. And then from those drops, from those releases that I've had, I've been able to bring people into my own little space and kind of create my own little world. So like my Discord has like 600 people in there, 200 and something of them are collectors. Others are just friends and not family, because I can't get my family to like jump on the art thing at all. But friends that I built in the Web3 community, where I can share my work and sell some of my art. And then some of them have come up into broader, bigger collectors and things like that. But the Web2 world is almost completely separate from my Web3 world. You know, so it's been such a stretch. You know, and so when I think about going into ordinals, which is something I'm really interested in, because like my physical stuff, the floor on my work is like $4,000 for the physical world. So I want to bring that stuff into the NFT space and create mirrored assets where I just want people to collect like Tree of Fire, well, not Tree of Fire, but collect any one of my pieces and then get a digital mirror. But I want them to do it on Bitcoin, or I want them to do it on ETH or Cardano, which is where most of my art has sold. So it's like, So that's the mix, but you have to adapt. You can't come from Web 2 and expect the same to work in Web 3. Mm-hmm. Maybe I could have just said that and shut my mouth, but that's my idea.
No, I think that those are really good. And I like the part about being consistent across, you know, no matter what group or what community you're in, because I think that that's like your trademark, right? That's how you get known across all of the different communities. The really cool thing about that is that as new communities come about, for example, ordinals, the ordinal community is something that we did not have a year ago. Well, actually, yeah, exactly a year ago. We did not have 13 months ago. That was something that just kind of came out of nowhere. And the ordinal, and which is why right now it's still so siloed. But the same trademark or the same persona that you had in Solana and Cardano, et cetera, and Ethereum, it transfers straight into Bitcoin Paris, which is what you've done.
Yeah, and I resonate a lot of what Jason just said. It's all about adapting to the tech and also trying to see the value that you can provide to your collectors. And also, I also do agree with keeping that consistency where, you know, your collectors can follow you to different avenues of the Web3 communities and different, like, you know, the Web3 world, different worlds, different chains, but they can kind of resonate with your art. They can still see that message that you're trying to express. And yeah, I completely agree with that. And that's kind of like the reason why I fell in love with ordinals. You get to tell your story with your signature in different ways and with the upgrade of each tech and of the space. So, you know, an example is like, you know, at one point, editions wasn't a thing on ordinals. But I think it was like 6 months last year, they were able to upgrade the tech and editions was able to be produced. So yeah. As an artist, you're able to, you know, capitalize on that for your collectors. So it's just one of those things. I do agree with Jason. You do have to adapt and be able to bring that value to your collectors.
Do you see any difference between your collectors, like your followers, between Bitcoin and Solana?
Yes. I would have to say it's more so the education part of it is that, you know, I have a few collectors of, you know, transitioned into ordinals, but I had to go into like more so the education side, like here's how you set up a wallet, you know, and that's the kind of, when it comes down to being an artist in the Web3 space, you have to wear several hats, like you mentioned, where you have to understand the communication, the marketing side of it, because, you know, we're on social media, so Twitter, your captions really says something about yourself, right? But now with the ordinal tech throws a real wrench into the bag, because then with your collectors, they like your ARP, or they're like, hey, where do I find it? How do I set up a wallet? And how much do I have to put? Because it's not just the Bitcoin price, but there's also the, you know, network fee too. So there is it's a big one. It's a conversation piece that, you know, as an artist, you have to have and be transparent about. So I would just have to say it's a lot more education on my end, but that I like that because I have a closer relationship with my collectors. They're actually taking the time to really get to know where my art is and like what I'm doing here. So it gives an avenue of like communication at least.
That's really, really cool. How do the transaction fees, just to, you know, throw some education out there, how do the transaction fees affect what people are willing to collect?
So, for example, and I last December, like right now, so there's a site called memepool.io, I believe. And the meme pool website gives you the network fee right now. Right now it's a 26, and I won't go into what that is, but 26 is the number right now. essentially the meme pool rate is how much the network is being used at this moment. So as congested as it gets, the number goes higher and higher. So last December, the rates were at 500 because people were just constantly using the Bitcoin network for whether it be like token trading or so on and so forth, but it was very high. So at one point, let's say you price a piece at $30 of Bitcoin price, or let's say $100 Bitcoin price, it could be as much for a network fee. And there is a site that you can use, which I share to my collectors, that, you know, this is you put the Bitcoin price, you put the meme pool rate, which is a network fee, and then how large is that? Well, sorry, I don't do that to my pledgers. I did it for myself, but I give them the rates usually. So it's basically how congested the Bitcoin network is, and then the more traffic, the more cost it is.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Go ahead, Jason.
That's the same network fee as on Ethereum, right? But how do they compare in cost? Like to dollar value?
So that's a great question. I'm not going to assume that I know that. I just know that, you know, I look at the rates, and right, anything below 10 is amazing. A good average these days is 20 to 30, and anything about 50 is going to cost you a lot more money.
So how much did it cost? You said you put 1,600 pieces up for your collection?
Yes. So this is a great real life example, right? So I had 100 one-of-one pieces that I released in December, and the meme pool rate, the network rate, was about 80 at the time. And if you inscribe with larger file sizes, the more cost it is. So my file size in total, the collection was 2,300 kilobytes. And 80, so the 80 was the mean pull rate, 2,000 was the size of the collection. And I basically put up 0.5 Bitcoin at the time, which was equating to 20K just to inscribe my stuff. but today, with the mean pull rate being at 15, 16, I'm working with a dev that is really, really good. His name is Rabbi. He's at, and it really depends, honestly, on the meme pool rate and also the dev that you work with. He's working his magic and putting like techniques to how to lower the cost of inscribing. So my meme pool rate is at 15. I'm inscribing 2,400 with, you know, different layers, and costing me about 10 to 12K just to inscribe in relation to, you know, the 15 versus 80 meme pool rate.
How does that compare, Jason?
Well, I mean, you did 2 megabytes of data, 12K. It was 2 megabytes each or two megabytes total?
So the 100 one-on-ones was like 2 megabytes, I believe. This
each or?
Oh, no, total. Total.
Yeah. I can't get a picture down to 2 megabytes.
Mm.
I mean, it depends on what the people want. But like, I can do my, so if I was going to bring a collection, like one collection I want to bring to Bitcoin is I gave a TED talk called Beautiful Things That Are Gone. And the pictures in that collection are all places that are destroyed. And I haven't minted it yet. And I've been wanting to, and I thought Bitcoin would be a good place, but I was like, okay, if someone wants like an on-chain piece of art, right? I mean, you're talking 10 megabytes minimum for a high definition photo. But if you want a 4K image that you can put up on a screen and say this was yours on Bitcoin, then we're talking 30 megabytes, 40 megabytes, right? So I'm like, I mean, what I could do is just do the certificate of authenticity and put that onto Bitcoin, and people could buy that. And that would be just kilobytes of data, depending on how fancy it is. My certificates in real life are like little pieces of art. So I mean, we're talking like, if I'm going to put a piece on Bitcoin for minimum 2 megabytes, then I'm spending, I guess, 12K to put it on. So like for me coming to Bitcoin, which is something I like to do, but the only way I'm doing it is if someone is guaranteed to buy it before I mint it, you know, like coming with the sale and they just want it to be on Bitcoin, then that's probably the only way that I'm going to make it there.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of the conversations that we've had, that I've had with artists on like why they choose to do it or don't choose to do it, it's the cost that's associated with it and the friction of, you know, shitload of money in comparison to other things. Yeah, totally understand that. Yeah.
I just wanted to kind of add to that, Jason, like, and I completely like your thought process, because I just had a conversation with a friend who, she's really into the Solana, you know, Ethereum network, and we're talking about like her pieces and her like what she's distributing to the community. And essentially the way that I think about it is that, you know, the Solana ecosystem as well as the Ethereum ecosystem, when it comes down to distributing art, there is value there. Like, don't get me wrong, there's value to be placed on chain. Like, there's the digital presence is very important. I think that's where thinking broad scale, where having that digital certification for an artist is something I think definitely hasn't been really spoken about, but I do think that that is a utility for artists where, you know, they're, for example, you create like one of your pieces and you want to sell that certificate of authenticity on like an uncommon set with a piece. So essentially the way that I think about it is, you know, and I know, and correct me if I'm wrong, I mean, just correct me if I'm going a little too deep into the tech, is that there's this tech called parent-child, right? So you inscribe one piece. So you, for example, Jason, you inscribe your signature, for example, and then anything you inscribe underneath that is attached to your signature. So it's linked to your that original piece. So that has a digital certification of you. So let's say you have your signature, you inscribe another piece underneath that, and you sell a piece, that certification to one of your collectors. It has an on-chain link and flow chart of like linking back to you. So that's essentially, I think that can definitely work for artists who really doesn't want to put their large scale art piece on Bitcoin. Essentially, I'm doing it because I'm doing a storytelling piece, but it could also have that type of utility too.
I don't think I followed that 100% of the way, but I think that's, maybe we can do a side conversation, or I could re-listen to this later. But that sounds interesting. Yeah.
Awesome. Paris, talk to us about your character and the story behind it.
I'm a created Julio, essentially, to be honest, and to be completely frank, I wanted to tell a story here in Ordinals, but I was learning the tech and it gave me an opportunity to go in spaces and talk to the devs about creating this brand. And essentially what I wanted to do is that I wanted to create a brand and a character that people resonate with and learn about the tech and the history of Bitcoin through Julio. Not necessarily from me, but through Julio, which is fun, which is loving, and you can connect with. And then my thought process here is that, you know, I keep the colors consistent and the character consistent. And through time, like, I am releasing a children's book, but the children's book essentially is to put Julio in the center of it and allow Julio to teach you about Bitcoin history in the simplest way, because the technology for the past year has been so complicated. I want a character to be able to like dilute it and just be like, okay, these are the pieces that you need to know that's so important, and it's what makes Bitcoin like special. So essentially that's the storyline of Julio, and curating a community of collectors that will be linked to the original piece that I inscribed in February. So the 2400 has that on-chain link to the original inscription. And so that's essentially the thought process. I nurture my collectors, and they can go into the journey of what the ordinal technology will be, because I feel like it will evolve the next 2 to 5 years. So
that's really cool. What's your favorite feature of Julio?
Oh my God, his tongue. I got that from my dog. Okay, to be fair. So Julio is a mixture of Super Mario and some fun characters, but I was like, he's missing something. Like, you don't want a character too perfect. You want something that like people can relate with, that can laugh. So I was like, okay, he's gonna, like, I looked at Princeton, my dog, at the time, and I was like, all right, you're gonna have a tongue, and that's it.
That's really cool. Yeah. That's cute.
So, I just posted one of your Julios to the Jumbotron. Oh, yeah. And you can see the Mickey Mouse influence and then the tongue, and Is that 4 years? Like, what is the...
Yeah, cool. So thank you. I did the 101 of Ones was like a homage of like old school cartoons. So Julio, it's, you know, there's like the parody of it, but like Julio is basically embodying like classic cartoons, so that at one day he becomes a classic cartoon. So that's essentially how I thought about it. He's going to be that ordinal cartoon that, you know, they say, hey, do you know Julio? And they're like, yeah, he's on ordinals. And that's kind of the thought process, that people love ordinals through the bright color of Julio, because it's not all intimidating.
I love that. Okay. And so that's also why you call him Super Julio.
Yes. It's it's a homage to Super Mario World. For sure. More so his body. And a lot of the times is that, you know, I just want people to enjoy like the art here, more so like producing more pop art. I feel like there's, you know, there's so many beautiful artists here, and, you know, there's Boozy down on the stage that I absolutely like look up to. His art is absolutely great. Swayze, he's from Fumojis. They have such beautiful pop art here so far, but very few, which I'm grateful, you know, being here on the earlier end. But I definitely want to introduce that side of the art space in Ordinals.
That's really cool. I'm also sharing it on the live stream. Satoshi Street is really cool. I see Simpsons on here as well.
Simpsons, Ren and Stimpy. And like my favorite characters in Disney, to be honest. And people ask me, well, isn't that copyright? I was like, no, I'm doing a parody of it. So I'm actually making fun of it. So it's just Julio like in their costumes.
That's really cool. I like how you incorporated the Satoshi Street, the street being like a particular inscription number, right?
Yes, in some ways. So I might dive a little bit too much into tech, so please stop me.
No, go for it.
So what people don't know is that you can use one Satoshi as a data storage piece.
What does that mean?
Where you can re-inscribe multiple pieces of art in one Satoshi. So for example, I have all of Julio's bodies, his logo, his faces, all in one Satoshi. So right now when you're inscribing, you're basically inscribing, each inscription has one Satoshi, for example, right? But what people don't know is that you can re-inscribe in that single Satoshi. You don't have to create a new Satoshi as much as possible. So you can actually hold all your IP and you have control over it. So that's kind of what I'm doing with Satoshi Street, where I'm putting all my art in one Satoshi. And so I have the on-chain like information that I hold this IP, and I'm building from that. So that's kind of where Satoshi Street kind of came from. I'm taking one Satoshi and building my IP and my art portfolio through each Satoshi. So kind of wild, I'm sorry, but yeah.
Even I'm like, sorry, say that again. What? Okay.
Okay, so a Bitcoin, I'll just simplify it. A Bitcoin is made out of several Satoshis, correct? So when someone inscribes a piece of art, you inscribe on one Satoshi. And that Satoshi is basically more so a core, right? It can hold, what people don't know, they can hold multiple pieces of art, not just one. Right now, people are only inscribing one piece of art on Satoshis. Wait,
okay, can we break that down a little bit? How much data can one Satoshi hold?
Right now, we haven't tested it, but for now, from what I'm asking the devs, there's a max, to be honest with you. So I haven't tested it. I asked the devs, well, what's the max? They're like, an infinite. And I was like, okay, I guess that's the storage for one.
So then if we
it hasn't broken
if we dumb
yet.
This down for a dumb artist, me. So it's like one, so can you, is it like a zip file? Like basically one Satoshi, you can just keep piling stuff into it, and then it's whenever you own. So in order to maintain that you own the rights to your stuff. You just have to hold that particular Satoshi.
Correct.
Okay, so how are you holding it? Like, are you holding it in a wallet that's separated from, you know, it's just to you make sure, like, hey, this one Satoshi never leaves my wallet and we're good to go?
Yes. So essentially, I have a separate wallet for all the IPs that I'm holding. I don't use it. It's kind of like a cold wallet. It just, that's it. That's kind of the foundation of the entire, my art portfolio. So it's a way I'm using it as an art portfolio. And then there's technology now where you can kind of, although you hold it, you can create additions to it. So you can create, you know, copies of your original piece, but you essentially hold your original art piece.
So in that way, it's like holding the contract.
Exactly. So in some ways, that's one of the reasons why I do love the ordinal space, is because although in Solana and Ethereum, you know, people talk about like IPFS and pointing to a certain server, I love the ability that I know that I have all my pieces on one Satoshi and I hold it specifically where I have control over my over my art.
If you were to do like a secondary collection to it, and a lot of people now are doing the parent-child inscription, right? If you were to do the child of it, would it be on the same Satoshi, or would it have a different one?
So those are all separate Satoshis. So okay. Parents, for example, you have one Satoshi and you're inscribing your art. And then children, separate Satoshis, and then you're inscribing your art. Not a lot of people have been doing it. Or actually, there's only another person that's doing it the way that I know it's doing it. And his name is Donnie. I'm actually wearing his hat. He inscribed several rats on one Satoshi, and he just held it as a collection. He's not doing anything with the collection, but he just wants to make sure that, you know, it's on Bitcoin. But the way I'm doing it is just, I don't know, there may be one other collection that may be doing it, but I don't really know anyone else that's utilizing Satoshis in that way.
Interesting. I'm going to open it up if anybody has any questions about that, because that's super tech. If anybody has any questions about that, if you're like, you know, wondering exactly how it works, get on up here and let's talk about it. Boozy, I see you in the audience. Maybe you can, you know, add some more color to this if you think it's necessary. Super duper interesting stuff. I think that those that are like wanting to embrace it end up embracing it, and you know, the others of us are like, have fun, that sounds really complicated. I'll collect, I won't actually partake quite yet.
I like the techie side. You know, like I was on Stacks, or I'm still on Stacks, but I haven't done much work or released another collection on there. And they were really techie over there. Cardano was super, or is super, focused on the tech. So the one thing I guess that, in my opinion, Ordinals has going for it is that the community is just much more, I imagine it's going to be much more like focused on education. And it just makes conversations more fun. I find that most people on ETH have no idea how ETH works, right? Yeah. So it's like they're just there, you know, shuffling things around and feeling good about it. But so this is cool. I mean, this, I feel like this will hold my attention a little bit longer. But again, it's just like, for me, it's like, how much time can I invest in, and where's the end result, right? But we'll see. We'll see. I have work that I feel like it needs to go somewhere, like the TED collection, and I'm just looking for a place where that it fits, that's significant, that it will be represented properly. What are the marketplaces on Ordinals?
So Gamma is a good one for artists. Gamma, right now, Magic Eden, and those are kind of the two larger marketplaces for now, mostly for the art space. I would have to say Gamma is the recommendation.
Yeah, I'm on Gamma for Stacks.
Yeah, okay. Same people, same link. They have really, in my opinion, like really stepped out there and taken the course of catering to artists and doing big things with artists. Yeah.
I met Jamal in New York, so Might have to go back to New York this year.
Are you guys planning on going to any conferences this year? ETH Denver is coming up. Then we have New York. Paris, I think, did you participate in the most recent Ordinals event in San Francisco?
That was a lot of fun. Yeah.
Tell us about that. Yeah, that was just last weekend, right?
Yeah. So I went to.
Yeah, how was it?
It was. Oh, I'm still recovering from that weekend. It was a lot of fun. So Super Chief, the gallery opened up the San Fran location,
and it is the very first. We actually had Super Chief on the show last week talking about that. So Super Chief had inaugurated the very first ever Ordinals exhibition gallery in real life. And they chose to do it in San Francisco, and they partnered with Bitcoin Magazine and Cypherpunk and a couple of other big names, right? To exhibit several really known, mostly Ethereum artists as well as Ordinal native artists to participate in this. So how was it?
It was absolutely amazing. I think so. It was Bitcoin Magazine, Super Chief, and also Cypherpunk. So for people who don't know Cypherpunk Labs, they're basically the core of Ordinals. Very smart devs, you know. Mm. They're the go-to to ask. Like, they can do magic with your art. If you want to inscribe something on a cheaper way, it's all about like the smarter the dev, the talented devs, they can definitely do anything with it. But I went there. Yeah, the art was amazing. Casey, the founder of Ordinals, they did a live podcast. There was some education. You know, Butoshi did AI, like augmented artificial intelligence workshops. And so that was the second day. The first day was just a party of like all the art and all the pieces. Violetta sang. She's an Ethereum musician, but also an Ordinals, heavy into Ordinals now. So it was, you know, honestly historic, I would have to say, because for, you know, it's the beginning of Ordinals, right? And it's on a smaller scale. The party wasn't like massive, right? It was intimate enough where people can still talk and hear each other and connect. So I would say I would call it very historic. I'm just really grateful to have been there, honestly.
That's really cool. It seemed like a place to have real FOMO over because it is historic, I think. You know, I think that it is historic. And I think that when the Ordinals community, as it stands right now, it is still very, very new. And I think that right now is when you start building those, you know, really strong relationships to... it's exciting to think about where it's going to be a year from now. You know, we've already seen so much change from just last year to this year. And it's in a lot of those conferences that you end up meeting people that lead you to your next step, right? Jason, do you ever go to these conferences?
Yeah, we've been going to a lot of them. I went to Stax London and NFT London and... Well, Paris Photo was for trad art, but yeah, I went to Bitcoin Miami in 21, and I go to Art Basel every year. Nice. So we didn't go to NFT New York last year, but I don't know if anyone did, but it was super quiet. So yeah, we've been going. I think that's one of the perks of this whole NFT space. I've made more friends through NFTs than I have in my entire life. So, It's been pretty cool. We actually don't have any on our list this year, except maybe Rare Evo. So I think we're going to Rare Evo, which is in Vegas, and then which is now multi-chain. And then that's the only one that's kind of on our list of places that we must go. So
if you end up going to NYC this year, let me know. We can connect in person. I have it on my list this year to go to. Jason, I wanted to pick your brain on what you think of the general stance of the NFT community, like right now, as you know, opposed to where it was last year. You have been in the bull market, in the bear market, and now back into the bull market in the cycles. And I always love to hear people's perspective on just generally, are we back in a bull market right now? Are NFTs hot again? What do you think?
I think we're coming back into a bull, right? That's what everyone's saying, you know? But are we going to be back in a bull NFT space? I don't know. There's a lot more to do on or with your crypto now than there was last year and the year before. And I'm seeing that a lot. Like DeFi is just huge. And I have over the last 2 years, people have always been saying, like, oh, I'm going to get a Jason Matias when my bags pump, right? Now their bags are pumping. They're like, oh, I can't see spending my bags right now because it's going to keep going up, right? And yeah, I'm like, hey, dude, one ETH equals one ETH, right? Or one ADA equals one ADA still, you know? But I think most people, when they say that to me, they're thinking about getting a piece for their home. So it's not the same, right? And then in addition, people are like, well, I can take my ADA or my ETH and I can buy something with it, or I can put it in DeFi and multiply it. So back, you know, a year and a half ago, they didn't have anything else to do with their crypto. So their investment opportunities were startup projects and art, right? Or early NFTs, whatever they are, PFPs, different forms of art. So I don't think we're going to see the same thing again as we did before. And that makes me sad because, you know, I've been here since almost day one and never really caught a thread, I think, to, you know, to do the whole skyrocket thing. But I never had that in my art career anyway. So it's just going to continue to be the grind and the work and, you know, like Paris says, cultivating your community and your create collectors and whatnot. So yeah, I also think that the people who have been here for a while or have been through the gauntlet a bit and will be more discerning with where they spend. Right? There's been an unofficial thesis in the art collecting community that, you know, there's three types of artists you can collect it from. Right? There's mid-career artists like myself and like I think Paris, I don't know when she got started, and then late-career artists or you know, established artists. And then there's the early guys who have the biggest potential return. And I think everyone was jumping on these early artists in the first few years because it was less expensive to do so. And there was a bigger bang on the return. But then a lot of them are getting burned, you know, or realizing that the secondary market for art is not what everyone imagined it would be. So people are going to be a lot more conservative with where they spend and start buying their art in the NFT space. I also think that the evolution of art collectors, you know, the sophistication of people who are looking at art is changing in NFTs, where we had people who, you know, most of the people I spoke to in the art world in 2021 in NFTs never noticed their empty walls before, never spent 2 minutes considering art as something to think about, you know? So those same people today are thinking harder about their art, thinking more deeply about it. And I think that in addition, the Web 2 that's coming to art now is also going to come with a sort of a Web 2, not a Web 2, but a trad art perspective on art. So they're looking for physical stuff. And I think that the future of the NFT space is real world. You know, like you're going to get a couch and then you're going to get an NFT of a couch so that you can put it in your digital space and have the same assets. So I think mirrored assets are going to be, or RWAs, real world assets, are going to be a real significant part of how blockchain becomes a part of the real world, you know, augmented world and whatnot. So those are the trends that I see coming. All of my big sales in NFTs have come from trad art. Yeah, they have been real collectors. So, and I don't have huge sales. Like I have one, my biggest sale on, I pinned it to the top if anyone wants to look, but I did I had a 90,000 ADA collection sell, right? But that was to a trad artist or a trad collector. He bought stuff, did a commission, and then I was like, hey, man, NFTs are cool. Do you want one? Right? So like he was like, yeah, whatever, dude. I'll do whatever you want. He's like my best collector. So we made that purchase in Cardano. And then my bigger sales on ETH have all been, my physical collector has been like, yeah, sure, I'll do whatever you want, dude. So, and I kind of think that's the future for the fine art space, is that it's going to be mirrored assets, people buying physicals with digital representation or digital certificates of authenticity. That's my appraisal, but I'm just a dumb artist, so we'll see how it really goes. You know,
I think you're a smart artist, and I think that a lot of people can learn from your experience. I think that you're spot on your thoughts on that. What's the difference between, like, have you had to change anything on attracting new collectors today versus 2 years ago?
I've stopped trying as hard, to be honest. I've stopped trying to get my real world collectors to go to NFTs because they're not doing it, right? Mm-hmm. And then I've stopped trying to get the NFT space to buy real world stuff. So my approach has shifted to participate in other communities and create art with them, right? So like collabs in spaces. There's a meme coin on Cardano, right? And you know, every time I say Cardano, half the audience rolls their eyes. But it's the 10th largest meme coin in the ecosystem, in all the ecosystems. So it's not nothing. But you know, like how can I apply my art and my philosophy to that? So I created a collection, and we sold like 400. Actually, we sold 420 on the dot, which is kind of funny. It was like part of their culture. So like I'll do it again if I find another community where I vibe with. And then you know, so like the art that I have made for me that I've brought to blockchain has been slower moving. So there's like a mix of doing both of these things. Mm-hmm. You know, like being a part of what's already here and then introducing those people to the stuff that I have on the outside.
That's interesting. I think that's one of the biggest struggles that artists have, digital, you know, when they're trying to find new collectors, and especially if they live in both worlds, in the trad art and in the digital world, of finding you know, the fusion of those, and then learning how to navigate both of those, like when it comes to sales, actually making that sale. I find that artists really struggle with that. Monk, I brought you up to the stage. You requested to speak. How are you? Welcome to the stage.
I'm doing great. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity to come up. I am a collector of Paris and Boozy, and I've been able to track along with what they're doing. And Jason, you said something that I think from the collector side, I just wanted to comment on. I'm not an artist, but I do love to collect. And I also love ordinals and BTC. And the thing that you said that I just wanted to comment on is kind of how collectors this time around of art are going to be a lot more selective. And I would totally affirm that. I would really affirm that. When I first entered this space, you know, gosh, collected some things that I didn't even really like. And then certain projects didn't go the way I thought they would. But one of the reasons why I actually do love ordinals and art on ordinals and BTC is because of the provenance and the shift kind of in art on BTC. For me, there's something special about it. And partly for me, it has to do with the value proposition specifically of BTC and the role that Bitcoin plays and will, I think, continue to play in the larger world economy. And then having art that you really appreciate on Bitcoin in and of itself, for me, is like this amazing marriage of the technology and what I call really a worldview of what Bitcoin stands for. And then having art on it is just, oh my gosh, it's absolutely amazing. So that was one thing. The other thing I just wanted to say was just reiterating what Paris said, as somebody that's considering it, just from what I've observed, once again, I'm not an artist, there are some amazing people in the ordinal space that I know just as friends that are the devs or people like Paris and Boozy that are so willing to help. And like this learning creative community that of people that are really willing to help other artists. So just, you know, keep asking questions and see if it's a possibility for you. That's all. Thanks. I appreciate it.
Thanks for coming up, Monk. Appreciate that. Yeah. Jason, did you want to add anything to that before we move on?
No. Yeah, I appreciate it and sent you a follow and we'll tag along. I guess I didn't know that this was going to happen today, but this is me finally dipping my toes into ordinals.
That's what, real quick, that's why I posted Nevin. I don't know a ton about him, but he is a photographer, I think. And I was on a space earlier today. There's probably people here in the crowd that know a lot more about him and his work, but I think he's a photographer that's minting this coming week. And so I have no idea how he's done it, but it's on Ordinal. So it just may be another resource. There's Bears.
I'll look for it and I'll watch, see what I can learn.
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of add on to that from what Monk was saying. Like when I was learning early on last year, one of the things I do recommend and I still recommend is being part of an art community here in Ordinals. You know, Boozy, Prism, they're part of Counterfeit Cults. They're the art community that's been kind of, they've been the art house since day one here. But the reason why I mentioned them is because, you know, the tech for me has always been so difficult to learn. And this is 1 year later, I'm still trying to break it down in the simplest terms to describe to people, right? But for those that, you know, are trying to get into Ordinals but are still kind of, you know, trying to like see, because I know Counterfeit has a few artists that hasn't launched anything but have been part of their spaces just to learn. I think that's kind of the best way to kind of approach it, to what Monk was saying, where you would be part of a community. And I introduced Postbook to Counterfeit, and now she's diving deep into sats and set hunting and diving deep into the layers and the numbers. But before that, you know, it was more so like, hey, I was like, well, there's a way you can storytell with your art, and there's so many different ways. Why don't you just jump into an art space like Counterfeit and talk to several artists and what they're doing and kind of just explore different techniques? And that's how I kind of got into it, where I was just trading stories of like, hey, I did this, and what are you doing? And we shared like notes in some ways. And then I experimented and I came back to kind of like the art community and I was like, hey, what do you guys think about this? So it's a collective of like testing something out, throwing it out to the art community, see what they say, give me feedback, and then move on from there. And then that's where, and there's also collectors in that space as well. So it's a married of both places of collectors learning as well as just artists. So it's a very healthy space to learn, which, you know, I obviously am promoting Counterfeit way too much, but I started there. So so I can't say like, I am so like grateful for that art community. So I've learned.
Are you working for Counterfeit?
No, right. I'm like Prism. But I was like really intimidated with the tech, and they kind of opened their arms to help me out to understand it. So that's why I do say that it's such a good place to start.
When I started hosting or being a speaker actually on NFA, not financial advice, which we do with NFT now. And it just so happened that we were doing it with Trevor, which in my opinion is like one of the godfathers of the ordinal scene, right? And it just organically happened that because Trevor being who he was, we started talking about ordinals on the NFA show, on the show, and celebrated a lot of milestones on there. And I remember early on in the days, I would always tell Trevor, we need to shake it up because all of this is so, like all of the technical things that we talk about are hard to understand, to talk through it, you know. One of the really cool things about the ordinal space, in my opinion, is the education, Jason, exactly what you just said. Like there is a lot of education that goes on in that ecosystem because it's so tech heavy and because it's so new that education has to happen with it. But it also gets incredibly boring and incredibly stagnant and, you know, and incredibly like, excuse me, what, why, how does that make sense? And explain it to me again. And I could tell early on in the days when we were talking about like really, really technical, you know, theories and ideas of it, you could see that like people were hopping off of the space and would come back on when people were laughing or when the subject had changed into something a little bit more easy to follow. And so that's been, I like the fact that Paris, your project has a lot to do with the education portion of it and in making it in a very fun way, because we need that in order for people to be attracted to it, and more than be attracted to it, actually adopt it and understand it, right? Actually, the other way around, understand it and adopt it is really what we need. And while a lot of people like the almost educate, like academic talk that goes on explaining ordinals, for newbies, it's still really, really hard for people to grasp it and to be able to understand it. So I look forward to people making it a lot easier and dumbing it down for all of us that are not devs.
Yeah, I think so. This is the problem that I found in Cardano as well. And the devs, right? The nerds, I guess, for one way to say it, forget that you have to bring education to people on their terms.
Yes.
Right. Mm-hmm. And you know, you have to use the terms that people can understand. Like, that's why I asked Paris, I was like, okay, is this like a zip file? And I can like kind of just shove everything in. So, you know, that actually makes it more fun for me. Cause one of the things I do with TASA, or the artist selling artists, I break stuff down for artists. So if I can break it down for them, then I can break it down for anyone. So that's kind of everything. I go learn something and then I find a way to teach it and translate it. So it'll be a part of the process. I'll do my best to help translate that for everyone. But we need, like, you know, 100 people to do that. 100, you know, influencers or people with big followings to talk in the language of the people who are listening to them.
That's right.
So
that's exactly right.
Interesting. I followed the one place you just mentioned, and I joined their Discord. So I don't know, like, since Ordinals came out, I was like, oh, well, this is where I want to put my beautiful things that are gone collection, but I just never wanted to build another audience. So we'll see. Sounds like there's a place where I can kind of be adopted for a little bit.
I'm excited about that. I'm excited to see where you go with this then. That's really cool. Very cool.
Maybe.
So Paris, I know that you've been kind enough to give out 2 whitelist spots a day. And so I was thinking about doing something different, which I think would be fun. Tell me if you're opposed to this. But I was thinking, we talked a little bit about who Julio is and the character, right? And so for anybody that was listening or wants to go out and Google real quick and do the research, what if we ask 2 people, the first 2 people, to comment on here something cool about the project that you talked about today?
I love it. Let's do it.
Let's do that. How about, and you know, you're the artist here, but I'm going to throw out an idea unless you want to change it. But maybe some other like real life things that influenced you, like cartoons or characters outside of the ordinal, like real life things that influenced the collection.
That's a great question.
Can tell. You can tell just by even looking at the artists, you know, on here. But comment on the comment button. I don't know what you call that thing. The comment button down at the bottom right hand corner, and then we will pick 2 winners to be able to get that.
And you mean specifically on Twitter, right? Because there's a few people watching on the live stream.
Oh, yes. Yes. Thank you for that. Yeah. I'm talking about specifically on Twitter. Although probably if they wanted to do it on here, I'm sure that we could accommodate that too. Okay, cool. So Paris, anything that we haven't asked you about today that you wanted to share with us about your project or anything else that we could support you in?
Honestly, it's an amazing conversation. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me. But as of topics, I would just have to say, so my mint is on Friday on Magic Eden. It's going to be an interesting experience. I've been, so I created the collection last year from June up until September. I was waiting for Parent Child to come out at the end of the year, so that's why we're here now. It's coming out now. Some updates to the ordinals, but it's a long time coming. It's been 1 year that I've been like looking at these pieces, and I can't wait to see them on Sheen. And for people who have it inscribed, I would have to say for me, it's a different feeling, because there's this excitement to know that I know it's going to live on forever, even past me.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been kind of on a rush of like, oh my God, it's inscribing. It's going to be on Bitcoin. I can't wait to like have that like immutable. So that's kind of what I'm feeling. So Friday is going to be the launch of the collection. It's happy birthday, Julio. This is 1 year. So, but besides that, anyone can always reach out to me, the Discord or DM with any questions with ordinals. I've been there. I'm still there. I'm still learning when it comes down to the tech. I still have several friends that I go to. I'm like, okay, this is the new update. Can you please dumb it down for me? I don't know what the technical aspect of it. So then that's where I pass along grapevine. I pass along what I learned. So anyone like Jason, if you need me to reach out to Prism, guys, connect you. Prism's a good friend. Absolutely love him, and I should really get paid by Prism, but but yeah, I can definitely do that. He's great at supporting people understanding ordinal stuff.
That's awesome. Jason, how about you? Anything that you are currently go ahead.
Is that Prism AIO?
PRYZM.
Prism Zone.
Yeah, I'll send you his profile. Let's see. Come on.
Is an XBit. Oh yeah, founder of Counterfeit. I found him.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah, they do a lot. They do a lot, and they're very involved. I see them a lot. I hop into their Twitter spaces as well.
Cool.
Mm-hmm.
Follow.
Jason, how about you? What are you working on right now that we can further support you on?
In blockchain, I don't have anything new minting. So if anyone wants to just check out my work, I'll post my Genesis piece, this week is my 3 year anniversary in NFTs. So I'll share that. And this is one of my lessons that I had to learn really early. Cause when I joined NFTs, I wasn't on Clubhouse and I wasn't on anything. I was like, this new thing came out, and a lot of my artists and the art selling art were asking me about what is NFTs. So I just went and read like 10 articles and then did it, which is how I do everything, right? And then found out that one, photography wasn't a thing here. Two, editions weren't a thing yet. So my Genesis piece that I just posted to the top of the thing was an edition of 50, because that's what it was in the real world. And I was like, okay, this makes sense to me. It didn't make sense to everyone else. So so that's my Genesis piece, and I put it up there, and if you could share it or wanted to collect it, that would be amazing. And you can find all of my work through Nick in bio.
So. Awesome. All right. Well, it has been a pleasure to have you both on here. I appreciate the time that you've been able to spend with us today. You guys are always welcome. I love having new faces on here. Paris, congratulations on all of your recent success. And I'm saying that preemptively before you even sell out, because I'm sure that you will.
Thank you. I really appreciate it. Absolutely. I always appreciate the support.
Of course. Of course. All right, everybody. If no one else has any questions, it has been a pleasure hosting you today. Hey, if this is your first time joining us, we do this show every single Wednesday at 2 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I'm going to be ending the stream right now. And all right. Every single week, we have new speakers and topics for you to join us. So if you didn't know, now you know, everybody. Have an amazing rest of your week. We're going to be following up to see who won those whitelist spots. And other than that, I'll see you guys on the flip side. Have a wonderful week, everybody. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
See ya.